Hey, we got it recorded. That's great. So this proprioceptor mechanism inside the human body is very, very powerful, and we see it in other examples. I watched my sister ride a quad for the first time. She was looking at this wall, and she could have gone anywhere. Anywhere. It was big open, but she kept staring at this wall, saying, don't hit the wall, don't hit the wall. And I mean, she ran right into this, you know, wall, this bush. So it was really interesting to me because I was going, you know, how can that happen? How can it be that we can look at something and run right into it or right over it? When our what we think is, boy, I'm really looking at that thing to try to not hit it, and actually the opposite occurs. So the number one thing, rather than getting really complicated on weighting this stirrup and shifting this seat bone, especially when your horse goes into motion, you know, beyond, you know, maybe you can feel it at a walk or a or maybe even a trot, but before you get into a canter, and so rather than thinking about weighting it, what will happen is when you look at where you're going, your seat bones and your balance and your entire body will actually transfer to the horse's body the direction that you are asking it to go. So say if you're going in a circle to the right and you look to your right, that changes your weight of your head through your neck into your shoulders, the position of your shoulders, down through your torso to your hips, to your legs, and you will naturally follow that feel and allow that feel to transfer through your body into the horse. And so what I try to take in our communication with horses is rather getting so complicated. You know, I've heard people walking away from, you know, a seminar or a demo that they've seen, and they're going, okay, now, what'd they say my right rein should do what in this and pull back and turn and oh, no, what about the legs, you know? And we can really make it simple where even if you just sit in a chair and sit up square, if everybody does that right now, just sit in a chair and sit square, if you look to your right far enough, you'll feel in the weight in your seat bones change. So rather than saying and focusing on, okay, I'm going to weight my inside seat bone or do this kind of a thing, I'm simply going to change where I'm looking. And anybody who's taken any kind of a riding lesson has been told, look up and around and look to where you're going. And that's why they're so emphatic about telling me that, because then your body will naturally do and weight. So I'll continue answering this question. But the main thing, if we can simplify riding, you know, riding is, you know, defined by the mere act of not falling off, keeping a leg on each side and going the same speed. And not many people relate it to being very active. And what's interesting is that, you know, people can do a lot of trail riding, a lot of activity on the trail and things like that. And it's really interesting because when a horse has a trail to follow or other horses to follow, mentally a lot of times horses just kind of check out. You know, maybe somebody else is in the lead, there's a trail, there's an obvious, you know, place for their feet to be. And horses that are asked to trail ride, yes, there are some challenges on it, but you go off trail and all of a sudden the horse's thought process has to change. And then you're actually riding, you're negotiating terrain, you're going up and down. Maybe the direction you're going isn't so obvious because the trail isn't sitting there in front of the horse anymore. So even when you're looking on a trail, you're looking up and around. If your trail is bending to the left, hopefully you're looking off and to the left. And so the horse can actually feel that. What happens and is really challenging for people is we get into an arena, and gosh, I guess it was a couple of years here at Bumblebee, a couple of years ago, we were doing a class, and I said, we're going to go on a trail ride. Well, I said, okay, everybody fall in and follow me, and, you know, gave the trail ride etiquette and all these kinds of things. And we were going around the arena and around the arena, and people kept saying, well, when are we going on a trail ride? And I said, we are on a trail ride. And when you show me that you can, you know, follow this little task of having the horse follow at a respectful distance to the horse in front of you, you know, all these kinds of things, then we'll take it outside the arena. But a lot of times people think inside the arena, you know, but wherever they go, it doesn't matter so much. And people don't take the opportunity to really ride their horse until they're in a situation where they think, you know, it's different. But as far as weighting the seat bones and weighting the stirrups and things like that, I actually leave an even amount of pressure in my stirrups, and I'm really just just looking and allowing my focus and my balance then, that proprioceptor activity, to transfer through my seat to my horse to give my horse the direction. So here's another thing about reins, because people want to get very complicated and technical about rein position, things like that, and there is a lot to know about rein position. But one of the basic things you can understand with horses is horses learn in sequences. So I'm not going to use my reins. One of the most common things people do is use their reins to steer their horse, because that's what we're told. You know, this is the steering wheel for this rascal, and that's what you're going to use. So we have a tendency to look at the back of the horse's head while we're riding. We're not looking up and around to where we want to go. We're trying to use the reins, and the horse says, well, you're steering me, but, you know, I have no idea where it is that you're going. And it can get very fouled up really very fast, because it's just a miscommunication. So how I like to use my reins in the sequence that I like to offer my horse is, I'm going to look where I'm going. My body naturally changes. I might support it with my lower leg, using steady pressure from my lower leg to give the direction. I'm going to open up the side that I'm asking the horse to move into. And then my horse is going to follow that. Now the last thing I'm going to do is support it with my reins. So I'm not going to use my reins to turn my horse. I'm going to use my reins if my horse doesn't turn. And it's the same thing for slowing a horse. I'm not going to use my reins to slow the horse. I'm going to use my reins if my horse doesn't slow or make that transition down from my body energy and my relaxation in my seat. So it's kind of takes something very technical and simplify it. And we did a cow working clinic here last weekend, and with a target of cattle, people's bodies, you know, started to do those things, because now all of a sudden their eyes are looking up and over. They're seeing how what direction their cattle are actually naturally following it. So you almost have to imagine that you have invisible cattle, whether you're on a trail ride or in an arena or anywhere. When you're asking your horse to move underneath you, you need to have that kind of a focus to do that.
Okay. Well, thank you for answering that question. That's really informative, and it's neat how you're able to take something so complicated and simplify it. This one is from Sharon, and it says, hi, I received all of your DVDs a few days ago, and I watched the first three in a series three times. Now I'm ready to work with my horse on some of these concepts. You refer a few times in the DVDs to going to some place to see how you work with different breeds and or other problems. I've searched your website and cannot find it. I have an energetic Peruvian Paso who will get into a real nice gait. I relax, and then she just wants to speed up. I stop her, back her up, and then make her stand still for a while. So far, this does not work. When I lunge her, she does not want to go fast. I can't figure out where the hole is. She is more prone to do this in the arena and not so much out on the trail. I try to mix it up to keep her from being bored in the arena. She's a real go-go horse, even out in the pasture. I'm thinking that if I step up my leadership, that may help. I would say that I'm about an 80% at leadership, and I can see where I need to step it up some more. I've always believed in groundwork, and I love the new things that you have taught me. Thanks, Sharon.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of things to understand about horses. You know, horses by nature, and it's just like people. Some people have more go than whoa, and some people have more whoa than go. And horses, in their innate characteristic, will demonstrate those same natural tendencies. The question is, then, how do you shape that behavior? How do you take a horse that maybe doesn't want to go and give them more incentive to, you know, have snappier departures, more respectful responses, you know, things like that? But a lot of times what people get concerned with is the go horse. And so here's this horse that has a lot of go, and we say, okay, how do we change your mind about doing that? So this is a very interesting subject, because and I'm teaching a week-long course here in Bumblebee, Arizona this week, and we were talking about it today. And a lot of the things that we need to do with horses to be effective with them actually come across as being counterintuitive. You would think, okay, the horse wants to go, so I'm going to stop him, and I'm going to back him up and make him stand still. And it's funny because if you take a carload of kids and they've been on driving all day long, I mean, I don't know about you, we had four kids in our family, and my parents would pull over and my dad would say, turn them loose, see. And we'd pile out of the car and we'd just, you know, have all this energy, and boy, he'd do something to have us even run around some more. So sometimes with horses that are designed for more go than whoa, it's almost like turning their dream into a nightmare. Now, circles will slow a go-y horse, okay? If you just take that horse and go run it down the wash and you just, you know, go on a trail ride and you do that, and you know, you can do that, but in a straight line, that's not, that'll actually lengthen a horse. That'll give them more go. So what you want to do with go-y horses is do more circles. And what's really nice to do, like with horse, especially a gaited horse like a Peruvian who's very smooth, I can take a horse like that, put it into a smaller area where it's going to be more of a circle, not a tight little round pen or something like that, but, you know, maybe a 70-foot round pen or even 100-foot. And, boy, I'd say, you want to go? Me too. And I would turn loose of that horse. I mean, you know, where are they going to go? And they're very smooth. And if you can go with that horse and have them go and go and go some more, and pretty soon that horse is seeing the same spot in the round pen, you know, 4,732 times, and pretty soon the horse goes, where am I going? And I go, I don't know. And then they start asking to slow. Not many people will ride a horse to that point where the horse starts going, you know, maybe I don't need to go that much. And people will say, oh, a gaited horse can't get there, an Arabian can't get there, a Thoroughbred. I have not met any breed of horse or any individual within the breed that won't get there eventually. But these horses are, you know, like, you know, people will say they're overfed, they're overbred, and they're under-exercised. A Peruvian Paso is designed to go and go and go and go some more. You got the Energizer Bunny. Okay, now your horse has a behavior out on the trail where it says, okay, here we go, we're cruising along, everything's good. Okay, when it gets into the arena, it may have a different association, and here is how we can inadvertently reinforce the behavior. The horse starts to go and take off and get going faster, and we stop the horse, we bend the horse, and we have the horse stop, and we soothe the horse, hoping it'll calm the horse down. Well, if you understand that the release is the principle of reinforcement for behavior in horses, you have just reinforced this horse running off with you. And the reason I recognize this very easily is because I did that. I got stuck with that with a mare of mine, and I mean, she was a runaway. She didn't just think she was fast. She, I mean, a girlfriend of mine said, oh, no, my horse is faster. And I said, really? Let's trade. And boy, I'll tell you what, it turned her hair gray. She got off my horse like, wow, you know, because she would really dig in. Like, you'd feel your seat almost want to come back over the back of the kennel. And what I didn't realize I was doing, because I learned like a one rein stop and I'd shut her down and I'd bend her to a stop and all this stuff, what I didn't realize I kept doing is when she wanted to stop, she'd run away with me. And then that would get me to stop her. And so it was funny, I kept going, you know, this isn't working, this stopping thing isn't working. I'm you know, one reining her to a stop and I can take her hindquarters. It's not working. And here's my mare sitting there going, wow, it's working good for me. I'm doing my favorite thing. And so what I had to do under, you know, guidance and direction from somebody else is to go into a safe area, under a safe situation, and just say, you know what, I'm gonna turn you loose. And from your description and how you wrote your email, I would imagine that you have a fairly confident ability, a level of confidence. You're saying your leadership is at 80%. So I would say that you could probably go into a round pen, even if you need to go to somebody's house if you don't have one, go into a round pen and just turn her loose. Turn her loose, and you sit there, and you just enjoy your day, and she's going to go, and she's going to go some more, and go some more, and she's going to, you mark my words, she'll be going so fast, and she's going, why aren't you stopping me? You should be stopping me by now. Aren't you scared and want to stop me? And you go, oh, no, you want to go? Me too. And pretty soon that horse will do what's called rating itself. It'll start to rate itself. Because what a horse will feel like ideally is like your vehicle. When you want it to accelerate, you press on the fuel. And when you want to decelerate, you don't slam on the brake. You just release the fuel. You know, if your vehicle is working properly, then when you idle back, that horse should idle back with you. Okay, but sometimes they won't idle back with you because we think, well, we just have to stop this thing. And we don't realize that we're inadvertently reinforcing the runaway behavior by doing that. So I hope that gives you some ideas. Again, if this is what I'm describing to you is beyond your confidence level, you know, don't do that. Or, you know, get to where you can work up to feel confident doing that. But I'll tell you what, when you do that, when you take that technique, and when I made, you know, had that shift in awareness and took a different approach with that, boy, everything changed. My horse got to where I could, you know, ask her to go, and then just by releasing the pressure and relaxing my energy, boy, she wanted to slow. And that's how you get a horse to where it will feel that way. And honestly, I have not met, like I said, a breed that will not respond to that approach if it's used with consistency and kindness and, you know, looking for a positive result.
Karen, and that's kind of made me have another question for you that ties in. Is it easier, do you think, to make a horse that wants to go to slow it back down, or the one that's slow to speed it back up? Do you think one's easier to do than the other?
Well, I'll tell you, when a horse wants to go, you know, in the beginning stages, everybody wants the horse to whoa. We want the whoa horse, okay? We want to put grandma on that horse. And then it's a good horse to have. But when you have a job to do, you need to do something, you know, after you get to a level of skill and ability, that's the tougher horse, to be honest, because you have to have motion to start developing the communication between the two of you. And a horse that is really sticky or dull or just, you know, I want to stand around, this is what I do best, you know, you're always having to be really aware to help that horse really keep their energy up and going. Okay? So, you know, it's the same thing with teenagers. Most teenagers, not all, But a lot of teenagers, they just really, you know, don't want to do too much in this day and age. You know, give me a video game and it seems like I'm busy, but, you know, I'm really not. So, you know, in the beginning, the horse that doesn't have much go is an easier one to kind of build your confidence on. But as you get more proficient in your skill set, actually the easier horse is the one that really wants to move its feet, and then you can give it some direction. So, and if you can take that approach to say, okay, you want to go, me too, you can always, you know, kind of help that horse get to the end of its desire to do that. Then you still have something to work with. You still have the nature of the horse that says, well, I want to go, but maybe I'm going to go only as far as you want, as you're asking, rather than as far as I'm, you know, dreaming. Mm-hmm. So, but that's a hard thing in the beginning stages. That's why I'm kind of quantifying it here. It's a hard thing to say to somebody, well, you know, you sound like you should just get on and here you go. You know, it's like, don't do that. If that's beyond your confidence level, you know, or your equipment level, or, you know, all kinds of things, you know, that there's other ways to go about it. But that is the most efficient way, really, to do that.
Okay. Well, we hope that helps her, and we'll be glad to have her email back and see where she's at with that for next month. Okay. You want to move on to the next question then?
Sure.
Okay. This one is from Peggy, and it says, hi, I received and watched your trailer loading DVD, and she says, thank you. I do have a question, though. The DVD talks about loading, so now I need advice on how to encourage the horse to stand quietly in along with how to get him used to the butt bar, et cetera, so that we can actually go somewhere. We have made so much progress, and my mare is loading nicely now, but I haven't closed the butt bar yet and want to be sure I do it right the first time so that there's no trouble in the future. She stands quietly, briefly, and then she wants to back out. Thanks for your help. Any offer that you have there?
Okay. Probably the number one thing, and I think I talk about this in the DVD, but maybe not, I wouldn't close a horse in, shut a door, or, you know, close the butt strap or anything until that horse would stand in there until tomorrow, okay? And so when the horses go in there, a lot of times because horses are pattern animals, you know, they step in, and it's like, well, you have a minute or two to, you know, get that door shut. And if the door is open, that means come out. So when the horse wants to come out, I think in my mind to the horse, you know, you want to come out, me too. But you're going to come out, you're going to back up and go forwards and jump forwards back into the trailer. And I would do that until the horse starts realizing, boy, my happy place is in this trailer, until there's a feel on my rope or, you know, something that tells the horse, indicates to the horse, I'm asking you to come out. So it happens on the back end of it, too, when you unload your horse. If your horse comes out, you know, too fast, and, you know, any horse can come out. I was here unloading my three horses when I arrived at the facility here this week, and my one horse, you know, for whatever reason, she decided to back out before I really asked her to, even though I had untied her in the trailer. She started backing out before I asked her to, and I asked her, I tried to hold her to have her stay in the trailer while she was committed in her mind, and she went ahead back out. Well, I had her load back in. And then I said, okay, now back out. And she backed out just a little too fast again. I had her load back in again and wait. And pretty soon, you know, every time your horse makes a decision, you have the opportunity to respond with a different decision. So I wouldn't put a butt bar up or close the door or anything until that horse is waiting predictably to come out when you ask it to. That's the number one thing. Because if the horse is still thinking of coming out before you ask it to, then anything that you do back there, you know, close the door or put up a butt bar or anything, is going to go, uh-oh, something's, you know, I'm already thinking of coming out. You know, your time's up and you know, you didn't get it closed in fast enough and I'm coming out. So, you know, even if you go to put up a butt bar or close the door or anything like that and the horse starts saying, hey, I'm coming out, I go, great, me too. Come on out, and, you know, this is not your happy place. Your happy place is back in the trailer. Until the horse starts changing its mind about the trailer. That's the purpose of trailer loading, is changing the horse's mind about it. But sometimes that last little residual part of it triggers old behavior where the horse loses confidence. Something's touching my hindquarters. And the other thing that you can do is when the horse is in there, rub it all over with the stick. Rub it all over the hindquarters, all that stuff. You know, take the door and rattle it, kind of swing it, make it kind of rattle. Or if you have a ramp, kind of pick that up and drop it. Try to do things to get the horse to back out before you close it in. And that's a real easy way to help the horses understand that even though there is activity behind them, it doesn't necessarily mean, oh boy, we got to get nervous and get out of here. So that's a really good way to do it. Now, before you ever even get to the trailer, and I believe I do this in the at the end of the trail loading video, and I talk about another segment about preparing the horse for closing the doors and butt bars and things like that, is take the lead rope, the 12-foot lead rope, and put it around the horse's hindquarters and teach that horse to what it feels like to have something pressing up against its hindquarters before you even get into the situation with a butt bar in a trailer. So you take the lead rope and you do the rope around, put the rope to the other side, rub that rope across their hindquarters, then drop the middle of it and pull the tail and have that horse, you know, move away from it. Teach your horse to move away from steady pressure around the hindquarters before you get into the butt bar. So when they feel the butt bar, this is what horses do when they feel steady pressure unexpectedly. By nature, their nature is to push into it. And I've seen horses that are not prepared this way, and you get them loaded into the trailer, everything's loaded, everything's good, and then you put the butt bar up and that horse feels it. And I have seen horses literally push against the butt bar so hard their hindquarters drop down and they can get up underneath that butt bar and scrape the back of their back. So you're absolutely right to not shut that, you know, close the butt bar or close the door until that horse is really, really right about it. But, you know, the people kind of learned, you know, you just, when you get good judgment by surviving your bad judgment. But if you spend more time around the horse's hindquarters, putting ropes behind there, putting pressure on those body parts, getting the horse confident with your communication from every body position, that'll better prepare your horse for when they go into the trailer, that you can hold the conversation even from standing back behind the horse. So that's how I go about kind of those two things, before you even get to the trailer, and then once you're in the trailer, you know, just keep fiddling around, and if the horse wants to come out, that's the main thing. Get the horse to be really jumping into the trailer and wanting to stay in the trailer until you ask it out.
Okay. Well, thank you, Karen, for that advice. And we'll go ahead and move on then to another question. This one is from Jeannie, and it sounds like her household is going to be a lot of fun here. It says, Santa brought three younger broke ponies to our house for our six-year-old triplets. I'm planning to attend your clinic with my horse in Kansas. How possible is it to translate what I am able to learn there to my kids to help them get started on the right foot with their ponies? Or do you ever offer any kind of clinic training for kids or those that are teaching kids?
Hmm. And what did I hear, Melinda? They're younger ponies for the triplets?
Yeah,
and I didn't hear how old the triplets are.
Okay. It says three younger broke ponies, and then her triplets are six-year-olds.
Okay. Younger and broke, don't, you know, define a broke, you know, a lot of times people define it as, well, you know, the less experienced the person, and I don't care if it's a person that's 6 years old or 60 years old, the less experienced the person, the more experienced the animal needs to be, okay? And to me, it may not sound like those are the three ideal ponies for it, just at a glance, okay? Now, I might be wrong. Those might be the nicest-natured ponies in the world, and, you know, as long as you keep them together, they're probably really good buddies, and your triplets probably want to ride together, and kids are great with ponies, and, you know, it'd probably all be good. But if it were, you know, my seven-year-old niece, and I said, okay, I want, you know, the ideal horse for her, it would be an older horse, a more experienced horse, a horse that has been there, done that, bought the T-shirt, you know, so many times that, the kid has to wake him up to get him to walk. That's the kind of horse that most inexperienced people need to really start on to build their confidence. So I have a little bit of a question right there. As far as transferring my knowledge to kids, kids almost don't need my knowledge because they're out there being kids and interacting with horses in a very playful kind of a way. I spend most of my time trying to get adults to quit being so serious and start doing, you know, goofy things with their horse that they wouldn't have thought of to expand their skill set with horses. So a lot of times with kids, what I'll do when I have kids workshops or 4-H groups or something like that, a lot of times, you know, kids are different than adults in how they learn. If you take six-year-olds and say, okay, now everybody sit down, pay attention. We will talk about the prey animal psychology. I mean, forget it. You know, it's out the door right there. So how kids learn is you set up games. And this is why kids don't need to go to yoga class, because they go out and crawl on jungle gyms. So if you keep it fun with kids and you go out and you challenge them and you say, okay, can you get your pony, first one to get your pony's front right foot on the paper plate, you know, gets a little piece of candy bar or, you know, whatever, you know, gets a little gummy bear or a, you know, rubber, you know, bird or something, you know, whatever it is. Put little challenges out there to get the kids to do things, and I don't really give the kids a lot of direction with, okay, now you're going to put your hand on the lead rope right in this position, and here, oh, now wave this. You just tell a kid to put the front right foot of a pony on a paper plate and they get a, you know, piece of gum. They'll do it, you know, before the adult can figure out or think through how to do it. So kids and instructing kids, it's really more about having them have so much fun with their horses and kind of staying out of the way, because they will go out there and be doing stuff with their horse and their pony that, you know, if they couldn't get to that skill level if somebody were sitting there giving them all the instruction of the world. So I hope that kind of makes sense. Children learn through activities and challenges and games and fun. So when I do kids formats, you know, sometimes the adults are watching and they're going, wow, that just looked like so much fun, but, you know, what did they really learn? Well, if you took a bunch of adults and had them come in and compete against those kids, they'd fail miserably because they're trying to be too intellectual about the whole thing. But the kids really learn by doing and tasking in games, and that's what I'd really encourage you to do. But really watch, you know, with the ponies and make sure that they are really the, you know, nice nature. And again, kids can take a, you know, a pony in that kind of description with just you know, letting them out there and messing around and playing and all that stuff can really get along very well. Ponies enjoy the interaction. All horses enjoy the interaction of most children because children are just, it's a way of being with horses. So I hope that gives you some ideas and insights. I get that question a lot about developing a program for kids. And I'll tell you, most of the program, if I developed a program for kids, it involved all kinds of challenges and games and fun and, you know, knowledge around and common sense and just, but I'll tell you what, it would really look quite different than what the adults naturally like. That's what I'm trying to do with the adults is, you know, help us kind of lighten up and laugh at ourselves and have fun again and really just enjoy the horses, learn a way of being with horses rather than a lot of structure and technique and technology, you know, to do all these things.
Okay. And Karen, that kind of jogged my thought. And, you know, we've got so many things out there that you hear and you don't know if they're true or not true or what your thoughts are on this. But something I want to know your opinion on is the age of the horse, because you've kind of talked about that with the younger ponies here. And then we've got young kids. Is there a rule of thumb, or it seems like there's something that I've heard that says you want to add the child's age and the horse's age and get into the teen years or something. Have you ever heard anything?
You know, I haven't really heard a formula like that, but, you know, again, if you're just using common sense with it, you'd want the child to have the best experience possible in the beginning. And, you know, unfortunately, and this happens across the board, whether it's for children or people new to horses, you know, people will tend to go, well, I'm not sure, you know, I don't want to spend a whole lot of money. It's my first horse. Not sure I really want to, you know, get into it. And a lot of people get into it and, you know, kind of think, well, I got to take the discount route. And so we get an inexpensive horse or we get an inexpensive, you know, equipment. And, you know, and believe me, I've done all this stuff. And it doesn't take you long to realize that, you know, cheap is not cheap with horses. You know, you need equipment that is going to be, you know, quality equipment designed for communication. And you really need to have a horse that's an individual that's going to be a great teacher for you in the beginning. And not many of us, including myself, selected that horse in the beginning. And I think I've told people on the teleseminars, I knew so little about horses when I got into it. The first horse I bought, I found out a year later after I bought her, she'd been ridden 6 times when I bought her. And I didn't even know really even to ask that question. Now, I'm living proof that God takes care of fools and children. And I mean, I didn't just ride around, you know, a pasture. I mean, I took her out on trails. I was like, here we go. Somebody showed me how to put a saddle on and got the saddle on and, you know, it looked easy in the movies. And, you know, off we went. I by myself, just off out trail riding by myself. You know, so when I think back on it, I just go, oh, man, I wish somebody told me a formula, you know. But I don't know, my age was so old, I don't know, you know, what age of the horse should have been to add up the teen, you know. Yeah. So you can look at a formula and kind of look at it. But the less experienced, you know, there's a wonderful saying that, you know, green means inexperienced. Green on green makes black on blue. And, you know, it just really doesn't need to be that way. So, you know, the beginner's horse, the kid's horse, those horses, boy, don't think that saving money is really going to save you money. And it's not even just money. It's the heartache of, you know, having a disappointing experience. But like I said, you know, most people really get along really well with their horses, and especially kids if you know, they can kind of get out there and just really enjoy the interaction and challenge them. And, you know, it depends on the individual of the horse. I've seen some young horses that I would recommend for somebody who's just beginning and going into horses because of the nature of the horse. But those are few and far between. But it's not to say that they don't exist. And I've seen some older horses that have been there, done that, bought the T-shirt that I would not recommend for the beginners. So there's exceptions. There's no really one rule in doing that. But there are just some things to consider and to think about.
Okay. Well, great. So be safe out there with the little ones. So,
yeah.
Okay. This next question is from Pat, and it's on saddle fitting. And it reminded me of your video that you have out on your TV show on the saddle fitting. So we might want to mention this to her after we've gone through the question that's also available. But it says, I've really enjoyed your DVDs and the other help from the teleseminars as well as the equine affair. I really appreciate your information from a woman's point of view. My question today is around saddles. I rode English as a teen and now as a much older adult am beginning to ride Western. Finding a saddle that is comfortable for both my horse and me has been difficult. I have short legs and get the and to get into the stirrup short enough there is not always enough fender leather at the top to allow for free movement of the leg. Are there any saddles made with women in mind? We are built differently, so our balance points are different. I'm currently using a Circle Y Flex Trail saddle, and also in looking at breast collars, I see that you use an over-the-neck or a pulling collar. Is this better than the regular breast collars or just a personal preference? I understand the need to have no restriction in the leg movement of the horse. Thank you, Karen. Hope to see you at the clinic soon.
Okay. I'll talk about the breast collar first. I do use a pulling collar. It's also called a martingale-style breast collar. If you see it on the video, you can see how it's positioned on the in front of the shoulders of the horse, and it follows the angle of the shoulder. So as my horse is reaching forward and the shoulder point of shoulder is coming forwards, it's not running into the breast collar. I don't think a horse's shoulder is going to not come forwards because of a breast collar. If anything, it'll, you know, you'll see rubbing points on the point of shoulder. Most breast collars are set to come across from the center of the chest, kind of down midway down the saddle, or even towards the ring where the latigo goes. And when it's in that position, when the point of shoulder is fully forward, it's pushing right into the breast collar. So that's the greatest point of pressure on it, and you'll see horses will get rub marks on the point of shoulder right there. So I like the pulling collar, a martingale style breast collar, because it comes up and follows the slope of the shoulder, so it never pushes into that. Now some people say, well, I don't really need a breast collar because I'm not climbing mountains, but a horse can jump, a horse can do all kinds of things. And like I was saying in class today, here we were talking about saddles. There is just not enough stuff on a saddle that can attach it and hold it in place in a horse. So I like a regular front cinch. I prefer a mohair cinch. I prefer to use a back cinch, and I prefer to use a pulling collar on the front. So I want my saddle, you know, fully rigged, even if I'm just, you know, standing in an arena and don't think I'm going to use it. It falls in the category of I'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it. So that's the style of breast collar that I prefer to use and why. As far as saddle fit, I'll tell you what, there are more opinions about saddle fit than breeds of horses, you know. And different activities will tell you the saddle has to be this or it has to be that. But you really want to think of three things when selecting a saddle. The number one thing is, what is the purpose? What are you going to use it for? Obviously, you wouldn't, you know, take a saddle like mine, a big heavy stock saddle, if you're going to do, you know, light jumping, you know. But you wouldn't, you know, take an English saddle and say, well, I'm going to go, you know, do stock work. I mean, you can do that. And in Australia, they use Australian stock saddles, but they have a different style of working their cattle in Australia. So number one thing is the use of the saddle. Number two is fitting the horse. And number three is fitting the human. Now, most people, when they're looking for a saddle, already have the horse. But if you don't have a horse yet, something to think about or think about for your next horse is, and not many people, I mean, if it's really extreme, people will say, well, that's really extreme, you know, high withers, or this horse is really, you know, mutton withered, which means, you know, it's a very flat shoulder. But not many people look at the horse's back when they're buying the horse and saying, well, gosh, would this horse be comfortable bareback? You know, I might want to ride bareback one day. How is that physiology going to feel? How is that physiology set up to, you know, fit a saddle? My saddle fits about 80% of the horses, average horses. And then I have a way with my saddle pad that I adjust it to fit, you know, and not perfectly, but it fits better on, you know, those other 20% of those horses. So the thing with saddles is you're never going to get a saddle to fit a horse exactly unless you do really a custom-built saddle. Even with saddles that are treeless or have flexible panels or any of the things, now the people that make those saddles will say that this, you know, saddle will fit every horse. I just haven't found that to be the case. And I've looked at a lot of saddles over many, many years, and ridden in a lot of saddles, and you know, everybody has their own preference in saddles, so you really have to find what works for you, you know, and your horse will tell you. But the thing to understand really with saddles is you want to fit, you know, the function first, the horse second, and then you third. But so many times we go into a tack shop, and the first thing we do, really the only thing, you know, you look at is, you know, you sit in the saddle, and you say, well, that's, gosh, it's a nice-looking saddle. It looks well-made. It looks well-built. You sit in it. You know, somebody there that's a tack store owner, you know, even a saddle maker, something like that, you know, they're sitting there, you know, answering your questions and that kind of thing. But, boy, there is so much saddles. It's just such a vast subject. And I've found people who are really experts in some areas, and really you can just keep gathering more and more information about it. But just you can kind of plan on going through, you know, quite a few saddles before you find one that you, you know, is really ideal for you and your horse. It's a tough one. It's really a tough one. And even, you know, how the fenders are turned and the stirrups, you know, we spent, you know, a better part of the afternoon here today just talking about saddles. And the other big question was horse trailers. So, you know, here we are in Bumblebee in class, you know, answering the vast amount of questions. And I'd love to give you a short answer and say, well, this saddle is best. But to be honest, I haven't found it. And even my saddle that's a, you know, custom made, it's a production saddle, but it's made by Jeremiah Watt Brothers Saddlery. It's an ideal saddle for me, but there's not many people I'd recommend it to because it's not designed for your use and your purpose. So, you know, there isn't really any one saddle that fits everybody. But if you can look at your horse's back before you even buy it and say, okay, I'm not going to have to get a custom fit. Because here's the downside to getting a custom fit saddle, and I've done that too. I have a horse that was very low withers and just my favorite horse. She was the one I rode, real pretty, you know, Palomino mare. I mean, she's my, you know, main squeeze there. And I had a custom saddle fit for her. I waited 18 months, you know, really invested in it. Well, she's retired now. And I don't ride her anymore. And so now I have this beautiful custom-made saddle. And now what am I going to do? Go find another horse with, you know, the same, you know, shape of back that she had. So custom saddles are not always the answer either if you're looking kind of in a long-term, you know, picture kind of a thing. So I wish I could give you an easy answer on saddles, but I just don't know of one yet. And I haven't seen anyone, even top educators that have really put out a saddle that just really, you know, see that they answer all those questions. So I think they answer a lot of questions, but not all of them for sure. So keep looking and trying things. The television show Safe Saddling doesn't necessarily talk about saddle fit, but talks about different features on saddles and how to saddle safely and how to put up your rigging and things like that. So, you know, if you can watch that television show or order the DVD, you know, that'll give you maybe some ideas as well.
Okay. And Karen, I did notice on your website now, those that aren't able to get the TV program on, you are now offering those shows on the DVD. Do you want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, sure. You know, we've been on Dish Network here for more than a year, and I wanted to, you know, kind of do a little, you know, anniversary party because the shows have been really terrific and people have had really great response to them. But, you know, people on DirecTV or cable, you know, don't get it or don't whatever, have been saying, you know, when are you going to expand? And so what we decided to do is to go ahead and produce the DVDs. There's three shows per DVD. They're $29.95 per DVD, so that's, you know, $10 per show. And they're 30-minute shows, and people just really enjoy adding them to their educational library because there's just so many subjects that are covered, and people really enjoy watching them and really get some little tip, you know, here and there that really seems to help them.
Mm-hmm. I watched the Dan Moyer one last night on the third one on your roping, and
yeah,
those are just really good.
Isn't that a great show?
It is.
And I'll tell you what, Dan Moyer, he is, if you Google Dan Moyer, he's on, maybe he's listening to the teleseminar tonight, but he is a terrific educator and, you know, around ranch roping and cattle management, and he's a terrific rawhide breeder if you're interested in, you know, having a new Bosal or you know, a Riata. He's a wonderful Riata breeder, but his rawhide work is really, really terrific. And his education, he's, you know, does clinics. He'll come to your area and do educational seminars. He is a terrific natural teacher. He raised daughters, and his one daughter rode with him for her whole life. So he's very, very aware of, you know, teaching without intimidating. And he sees everything. He spent, you know, his daughter's lifetime, you know, keeping an eye on her. And he said, you know, she never got hurt, from a little girl. And I mean riding on big ranches, not just, okay, we got, you know, a dozen cattle in the backyard. I mean big ranches. And ranchers have hired her. She is just really a top hand because of his guidance and direction. But, yeah, look at Dan Moyer. Google him. He's also on Facebook. And he's a treat to know. You know, mm-hmm. even if you don't go do an educational seminar with him, he really is a treat to know. So.
Mm-hmm. I really like the fact that he is willing to give you that, not just information, but the why that we women need.
Yeah.
Why you have to do it that way, or
yeah.
he suggested it that way. So
mm-hmm.
it was really good. So we got you're out in Arizona right now, and I know we're ready to here to wind up, but the camp's going well. And do you have anything else coming up that you'd like to hit on real quick?
No, just, you know what's been interesting? We've just gone on Facebook, and I've had a little bit of resistance to it because it seemed like, you know, that friends thing was, you know, kind of weird. But we've arranged it to be a really neat deal. And, you know, if you've ever looked at the website and tried to figure out, well, gosh, what's new or what's different or what's coming up, it's kind of hard to sort through sometimes. I mean, it's all on there, but to just read a website and, you know, see what's going on and feel in touch is kind of hard. And so we've added a page on Facebook. And if you go into Facebook and look up, you know, just do the search for Karen Scholl and add that, you become a fan of that. And then when little things come out, like a reminder of the teleseminar, it's just on your Facebook. And if you're worried about Facebook, it's something you haven't done, you're a little concerned, you can do all kinds of privacy settings so people can see that you're on Facebook, but they really can't even access you. So you don't need to put yourself out there, you or your family. You know, you feel a little vulnerable. You're like, people are, you know, looking at, so I wanted people to see the business side of it and have access to, you know, things that are coming up and going on, but not necessarily, hi, I want to be your friend, and I have to say, well, you know, I don't know you, and, you know, and saying no. So it's kind of this, you know, strange kind of a thing. But there's a way to set your, make your privacy settings in such a way that you don't have to do that part of Facebook. So, you know, maybe you don't want the people you went to high school with find you. You don't have to. You don't have to if,
yeah,
if you look at it. So I kind of got over it. I went on it and got off it within a week, and then I looked at it and got a little more information, and I think it's just really working out terrific. And the numbers of people that are joining it are just, you know, really indicating that people appreciate being connected and feeling like they know what's going on and what's coming up. So it's
Karen,
been
we
really
do really
good.
Appreciate all the information you do get out there and the accessibility that you give us in so many different options and stuff, whether it would be a live clinic or the DVDs or the teleseminars or the TV show or now we're on Facebook. So you really make yourself accessible, and we really appreciate you doing that. So
great. I'll tell you kind of a neat thing that's come up. There's a new expo up in Canada that I was invited to. The I can't think of the name of it yet, but you'll see it on Facebook and the website. But another event that's come up, and this is in the fall, I was invited to compete in a colt starting competition in Virginia at an expo in Virginia, Equine Extravaganza. And so I'm really excited. It's a first that I know of, the first all-women's colt starting, and it's three clinicians, and I can't say who the other two women are. But, yeah, in October I'll be participating in a colt starting competition there in Virginia, so I'm pretty excited about that. Because not many people
video that?
Well, not many people know that I start colts. It's kind of like, oh, well, you know, it's horsemanship for women and, you know, you do all this kind of stuff. But I really enjoy steering colts. I really enjoy helping problem horses and things like that. So I'm pretty excited to go into the competition and, you know, have some wonderful colleagues to compete with, not against,
yeah.
I imagine
fun.
Competing with. Yeah, it's great.
Now, will they video it so we'll have access to it, do you think? Or?
You know, I don't know. They're really modeling it in a similar format to Road to the Horse. So I don't know. They may offer the video for sale, or you may just have to fly to Virginia and see it.
Okay. Well, you probably have information as that comes available on the website. So if you haven't been on Karen's website, please check it out. I was on it again today, and you're always changing it and keeping it updated. So go in and see what's new on Karen's site. So we appreciate everybody tuning in tonight. And Karen, certainly we thank you for taking time out this evening as well. So do you have any last words before we kind of wrap it up tonight?
Well, you know, it's like with our horses. We sometimes forget to thank our horses and express appreciation. I really want to say that this is really all about the horse, and they are really the best teachers. And the people, I really want to express appreciation to you, Melinda, and your husband, Mike, to my husband, Mark, and the folks helping me, Joe and Pam, and everybody else who is, you know, helping to get the word out that, you know, there's an approach that can really help you with your horse, and just keep trying and keep searching, and, you know, your horse deserves it. And I really appreciate everybody for dialing into the teleseminar or listening to it on the website, and hope that this information really helps you and helps you realize your dream and achieve your goals with horses.
Well, I know the word's out in Indiana because I've only got 2 or 3 spots left for the clinic. So if you're thinking you want to come to Indiana to a clinic, you need to call me. It's filling up quick. We may have to.
Well, that clinic's when? When is it?
That is in May. It's May 22nd and 23rd. So.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty amazing, Melinda. You've got a clinic clear out in May and only have a couple of spots left. And I always enjoy coming to Indiana, and I'm looking forward to it because we're also going to the Indianapolis 500 the following weekend. I'm very excited about that, and I'm going to have a wonderful visit with the folks on the Andretti team there that we've got to meet, and really excited about our trip to Indiana, as we always are, but extra this time.
Well, great. Well, Lisa's got your sleeping arrangements figured out, but Mark, he's on his own.
Oh, good.
He's on his own.
Yeah, apparently I'm going to share the room with your granddaughter.
Yeah.
That's great.
She's got it figured out. Well, we appreciate everybody joining in tonight. Everybody keep safe and enjoy your horses, and we'll talk to you next month.
All right. Thanks so much, Melinda.
You're welcome. Good night, Karen. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.